Hello, welcome to us getting back into Spooktober.
Oh my god, yes.
I wanted to tell you about a slight Spooktober adjacent callback. Mm-hmm. Not last year, but the year prior. We did some good Satanism talk on Spooktober.
We talked about
the Satanic Temple, and we talked about
The Church of Satan.
Yeah. So I just, in some current events, the Satanic Temple is once again relevant. Do you know about this?
Wait, no. I don't think. Okay. Tell me.
The Satanic Temple, bless them, my people, maybe.
These are the people who teabagged the headstone. Go listen to the episode.
To turn someone who was dead gay, let's go back to the episode. It's awesome.
There's sort of like libertarian pranksters. It's great.
100%. That's exactly how you should describe them. Okay, so here's more libertarian pranksterism hard at work in our democracy. The Satanic Temple is bringing a case to the Supreme Court that under religious freedom, their members must be allowed the right to abortion, and that the Texas abortion law undermines that right.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
I mean, I think if Satanists end up saving Texas from Christian tyranny, like what?
And like
our minds,
just like the incredible subversive nature of their work, like that they can be like, oh, you think that we like want to abort babies? Like, okay, like religious freedom.
They're like, yeah, that's actually part of our religion is abortion. I'm just like, bless the Satanists. They're like, oh, you're a bunch of homophobes. They're like, part of our religion is like hexing people into being gay.
Yeah.
Like they also did that.
They did. Oh my God. And it only matters because the people that they're trying to piss off are pissed off by it. And so therefore it's successful. Yes. God, it's so satisfying. Wow.
I don't know how much of a case there is. I don't know about how these things work. But it is a quick Google away if you want to read some articles that people are like, is the Satanic Temple, like the Texas abortion bill's like last chance?
Listen, I'm going to keep tabs on that because they do some good work and they have like some political lawyers and stuff in their corner. So maybe, I don't know. I can't remember the leader's name right now, but he's really great from what I remember. And if anyone can save Texas from a lack of abortions, it is
Satanists.
Hey, the Christians maybe should consider that, like, at one time, to call back to an earlier episode and during space camp, the Antichrist was aborted, so looks like you guys lucked out there.
Joke's on you. You guys are the original aborters. Man, we're gonna get into that a little bit, I even think, today. So on that note, I guess also welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
Spooktober edition. Speculating wildly.
Sure.
A sex manual, you know, from the 17th century.
And remember, the greatest myth about the moon is that America went there in Apollo 11. Good night. Good night.
Oh yeah, I would slice my hand open for moisturizer.
Well, we've brought it back to blood magic somehow.
Is franchising our platform? We're franchising it, okay?
They're going to break your legs and feed you to the sharks.
No, fuck Barnes & Noble. I never cared about them. I'd throw hands at Dan Brown, okay?
The handsome snakes with wings fucked the women all night. Nobody ever talks about that passage.
Welcome to Why Are You Like This? Spooktober, our very own treehouse of horror, where in a special kind of festive way, we do what we usually do, which is host a weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, pseudoscience, real science, pop culture, whatever we're noodling on at any given time, including Satanists, the Satanic Temple, and anything with a spooky flavor this month. So welcome back. That is Jamie Ryan holding down the treehouse in Los Angeles.
And there's Austin Williams, never having worn a rubber mask, to my knowledge, in Chicago.
That's correct. I don't know that I'd like that. I think I'd be claustrophobic.
Yeah, I see that for you. In the same way that, like, you didn't like sandwiches in elementary school, I feel like.
Well, I don't know how those two things are related, and I still don't really like sandwiches.
Some listeners understand right now. Some listeners understand.
Okay. I don't know how sandwiches are related to a rubber mask, but go off. Listen, the classic American sandwich is food at its lowest form, okay?
It's medium. But no, to be fair, I don't like a rubber mask either. It was just what I pulled out for you, assumingly.
I immediately just pictured, like, the rubber man from American Horror Story season one, Murder House.
Oh, throwing it back. We're doing double feature right now. I have to say, I did try to watch the first episode of, like, the creature in the sea one, where Sarah Paulson's, like, a hag in the grocery store. And it was
I don't know about this one.
It was very boring. Like, so I have continued. It's been disappointing. Guys, get at me if I should revisit that. But the first episode was dry.
Yeah. I want people to tell me about what other seasons I should be really into, because
you watched The Coven, right? I'm assuming you would like that one.
Yes, but actually my favorite two are Murder House and Asylum, even though Asylum kind of jumps the shark at the end with, like, some alien stuff.
It's the scariest one until that point. Those are the
yes, those two are the scariest until Asylum jumps the shark. And I liked Coven, but I think that, like, the first two seasons, like, I found very frightening. Mm-hmm. And I think energetically I didn't like Coven as much, not because it wasn't good, but
I
because
liked it
I
in
was
a charmed
like,
way. It had more of a WB flavor.
Exactly. I was, like, looking to be scared. It was just like I was palate prepared for the wrong thing. I thought I was being served enchiladas and they brought me spaghetti. You know?
It was Ryan Murphy was, like, dreaming about Scream Queens, making that, and while he was making Coven, probably. So
100%. Like, Emma Roberts, there she goes. Yeah. And you know what? Good for them, okay? But we're not here to tell you about American Horror Story, or anything. We will accept messages, though, about seasons we should give a shake to. I'm listening to that, okay? But we are here on our first episode of 2021 Spooktober to talk about curses.
It's about time.
I mean, cue the Phantom of the Opera music. I feel like with curses, the closest thing we've kind of come to dabbling in this is when we talked about superstition.
Or magic, maybe, sort of.
Sure, there's a little bit of overlap on both sides, but I'm excited.
For sure.
Yeah, and that we really highlighted some Yankees, Red Sox, in a rare pivot to sports.
Yeah, that's truly unusual.
I know, but it was a good example, so there you go. Mm-hmm. And lots of superstitions out there, but superstitions, if you want to hear about that, go into the archives. But what is a curse? Why don't we start there? Let me tell you, from our favorite source, Wikipedia.
Yes, okay. Please.
So a curse, also called an imprecation, a malediction, a hex, an execration. Okay, we'll do that. Malison, anathema, or commination. And I'm like, I mean, okay, like, we didn't know there were this many words for a
we
curse.
Didn't.
I might have mispronounced a few. We can't know. But
we can know.
A curse is any expressed wish that some form of adversary or misfortune will befall or attach to one or more persons, a place, or an object. A curse can also be called a hex or a jinx.
Remember that Pokemon with the huge tits and lips named Jinx?
I sure do. Could never forget. Hashtag never forget. Okay. In many belief systems, the curse itself or accompanying ritual, I mean, maybe we really are talking about Coven. We can't know. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is considered to have some kind of causative force in the result. And to reverse or eliminate a curse is sometimes called a removal or breaking, like breaking a curse. And the spell has to be dispelled and is often requiring kind of like elaborate rituals or prayers.
Sure.
Now, I do just want to mention, for our Christian brethren,
amazing,
who didn't know that they were the first advocates for abortion with the Antichrist, mm-hmm, I'm sure they're going to say all sorts of weird shit about magic because that's what they do. But I just want to say that according to the Catholic Encyclopedia article, cursing, the Bible depicts God cursing the serpent, cursing the earth, cursing Cain. Similarly, Noah curses like Canaan, and Joshua curses the man who should build the city of Jericho.
Eve is cursed with a myriad of problems that we all now have, such as oppression and pain and childbirth.
I mean, listen, in various books of the Hebrew Bible, there you are long this. Lists of curses against the transgressors of the law. We've got the 10 plagues of Egypt preceding the 10 commandments, and those can be seen as curses cast from the rods of Aaron and Moses, acting on instructions from the God of Israel in order to enable the enthralled to come free from the yoke of enforced serfdom, not slavery, the and the like. Wow. Listen, and in the New Testament, all these Christian gospels and all the things, Christ curses the barren fig tree. He pronounces his denunciation of woe against the incredulous cities in Matthew, against the rich, the and worldly, a lot of these the scribes,
cause things
the
to
Pharisees.
Happen.
And he foretells the awful malediction that is to come upon the damned in Matthew. So Christians, oh don't God. Come for me about saying y'all aren't up on curses, because the Bible and the Hebrew scriptures full of them. Okay?
Well, those are righteous curses, you know, so it's like it's fine.
Oh, okay. Then it's all right.
It's got the seal of approval, yeah. Seventh seal.
I knew you would appreciate that.
Thank you. I loved that. I loved that. Yeah.
I know you did. Yeah. Listen, the Bible's full of curses and abortions. Okay.
And some gays. Go on.
And
looking
gays.
At you, Ruth, and that other woman, and also David.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay. Listen. It's full of some stuff.
David bisexual, to be totally fair, but also an open adulterer. Okay, it's, you know, the complicated story of David is for me to do on another full episode.
I think that's probably right. The complicated story of David. Oh, Laheim. Okay, so
just
let's
a
talk
songbird
about types.
And a poet. I'm done. I'm sorry.
He's a songbird and a poet, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so types of curses. Other than biblical. Mm-hmm. So what are they? Okay. The study of the forms of curses comprises a significant proportion of the study of both folk religion and folk lore. Mm. Love it. And in Hindu culture, the sage or the rishi is believed to have the power to bless and curse, mm-hmm. kind of like that. Mm-hmm. And there are also some special names for specific types of curses that can be found in other cultures. What are they? Mm. So we've got African American hoodoo, which presents us with the jinx and cross conditions, as well as a form of foot track magic that was used by Ramandeep, whereby cursed objects are laid in the paths of victims and activated when walked over, which I liked.
Oh, it's like a supernatural booby trap.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought of it as. In Middle Eastern and Mediterranean culture, we've got the belief in the evil eye, which may be the result of envy, but, you know, maybe even more rarely, it's said to be the result of a deliberate curse. Mm-hmm. And also, in order to be protected from the evil eye, there, like, a protection item can be made. And it's those, we've all seen, like, the kind of dark
eye.
Blue circular glass, no. right? With, like, the, yeah. No. Well, these, you'll see it in, like, Greek jewelry a lot. Like, I feel like in, like, other Mediterranean cultures. But it's that, it's not a god's eye, but it's, like, a blue, like, a dark blue circular glass with, like, white and then the black eye in the middle. And it looks kind of like a human eye. And it's supposed to be, yeah, like a protective item, and they make them in all sorts of sizes. So, and then German people, this is another cultural specific, including the Pennsylvania Dutch, listen up, speak in terms of hexing, which comes from hexen, the German word for doing witchcraft. Okay. And a common hex in days past was laid by a stable witch who caused milk cows to go dry and horses to go lame. So these Pennsylvania Dutch and these Amish
I've
folks are like, I'll fuck
that.
Up your farm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fuck up all your money then. And your food 100%. Supply. Absolutely.
They're coming for you. So we've got all sorts of things and all sorts of like different cultural kind of.
Everybody's cursed. It's cursing all around the world, truly.
100%. And so I thought I'd like to start with some curses that perhaps you have heard of, but I would love to give you kind of a rundown of six very famous curses and their origins.
Yes, I would love that.
Okay. So, you know, throughout history, obviously, people have promoted stories of curses for a variety of reasons. There's like sports fan stuff, you know, the curse of the great Bambino.
I'm not getting into that one. Yeah.
But there are things like that. And then oftentimes you have things in history where like there's a cause of death is misunderstood. Sometimes people are like, it was a curse. And that makes me think of Salem witch stuff for sure. When people like you couldn't explain what was going wrong, or people are making things up, just saying.
Or like, and people don't understand what hemophilia is and they think that like this royal bloodline is cursed. Anyway, go on.
Totally. And historically too, like for kind of imperial nations, we always hear curses can be like kind of like display anxiety about the fact that, you know, people when they were colonizing were like taking artifacts and stuff, and then people will be like, that thing's cursed.
Wow, that's a lot to dig into another time. Actually, I had just a flood of feelings and thoughts about that.
Oh yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, but I thought I would start with I feel like a curse almost everybody's heard of, and we're going to go through six that are the most prominent curses in history. The first being King Tut's curse.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of generally some other mummy curses.
Sure, yeah. And you know this is my shit all the way. Do these mummies in my sleep.
You know how some people are horse girls? Jamie was like an ancient Egyptian girl. She was like very interested. She was like writing in hieroglyphics.
Hatshepsut was a dope bitch. She had an Egypt-themed
birthday one year. Like it was clutch. She was very interested. That's all I'm saying. Things you didn't know. Now you do. You're welcome. Okay.
Yeah. It was this part of my personality, but in 2004. No, earlier.
Earlier. You way were very earlier. Changed by like a sixth grade social studies concept.
And no, it was like, much earlier, because by the time I got to sixth grade social studies, I was like, this is all we're going to learn. Like, I learned this from my first History Channel tape that I got at Family Video, you know?
I can't.
Yeah.
A real Whew. MVP. Okay.
Yeah.
So what about King Tut?
Queens, but what's up with King Tut? Go on.
I mean, listen, I'm here for the Egyptians. They worshipped cats. You know how I feel.
And they were smart okay. as hell.
So in February 1923, a British archaeological team opened up the tomb of Tutankhamun, yep. right?
Cracked
or King
it open.
Tut, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
And King Tut was an Egyptian pharaoh, like 14th century BC, okay? So 1923, the Brits are opening this up. And 2 months later, the team's sponsor died from a bacterial infection. Mm. And when that happened, British newspapers claimed without evidence that he died because of King Tut's curse.
Of course. And the British newspapers are responsible for quite a bit.
Exactly. And so whenever subsequent members of the team died, the media dredged up all of this like alleged curse stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
So King Tut's curse and other famous mummy curses were invented by Europeans and Americans while their countries removed priceless artifacts from Egypt. So there you get into some of the like
colonization style feelings processes. About that. Yeah.
And even like it's like, is it guilt or are you also like, again, kind of like dehumanizing this other culture by like making it like otherworldly and evil?
Well, like, you know? They are like pagan kind of like, yeah, like evil dabblers. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it more okay to like go in and just like fuck with someone's burial.
Totally. And this is so wild. I didn't even know this until I was doing this research. But after the Titanic sank in 1912, some newspapers, again, these British people, even promoted a conspiracy theory that the ship had sunk because of a mummy's curse.
Oh, like, I've what? Heard of that. Yeah. There were actually a few like weird rumors like that after the Titanic sank that like ripped through the media. But yeah, I don't remember why, but the mummy's curse was part of it.
Totally. And though it's not clear how many people actually took these curses seriously, super popular in horror movies and like fiction. You know, the mummy of our lifetime, but also the mummy that came out in 32 and
yeah, not
comedies,
just
like,
Brendan Fraser, who we love to talk about repeatedly
on this
podcast.
We love to speak of Brendan.
Yeah.
Mm. So I want to tell you, second curse, I want to discuss a little bit. This is one I actually hadn't heard of, but like there's a lot of information and the History Channel seems to think this is one of the six biggest ones ever.
The History Channel needs to check itself in some areas. And there is one curse I'm waiting for that I'd like to guess later. Go on.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'll be excited if I hit it in here. So say what I'm going to talk about is the curse of the Polish king's tomb. So in 1973, a group of archaeologists opened the tomb of the 15th century Polish king, Casimir the Fourth, and I struggle with this, Jagiellon, I don't know, guys, forgive me, but he was a 15th century Polish king, and they opened up the tomb. It was in Poland, as you could expect.
Sure.
And as with the opening of King Tut's tomb, which happened, you know, about 50 years before, the European media again hyped up the event, and the researchers involved like allegedly joked that they were risking a curse on the tomb by opening it. And when some of the team members began to die shortly after, some media outlets again speculated it was due to a curse. Later, experts discovered traces of deadly fungi inside the tomb that caused lung illnesses when breathed in, and that was the cause of their deaths.
I was going to is there
kind of a curse?
It is curse adjacent, because like it's not hurting anyone if you don't disrupt the tomb, but like yeah, if you bust in there, wow.
I don't know. I'm like, why does it have to be unable to be scientifically explained to be a curse? I don't know. That's up for debate. I didn't see anybody saying that.
The best point ever that I haven't thought of.
I'm like, who's to say, you know?
Yeah, because somebody puts a hex on you and you come down with like a regular ass cold that you got at the grocery store. Like, that doesn't mean that you weren't hexed.
I'm saying. Okay. This is the one that I kind of wonder if you were maybe thinking of. But the third one I'm going to bring up is the curse of the Hope Diamond.
Yeah.
Was that the one you were thinking of?
Yeah.
Okay, tight. Well, I'll tell you.
I don't know anything about it, though. I just know people talk about it. That's I don't know what it is, though.
So in the 1660s, we're going back earlier in time than we've been thus far. So there was a French gem dealer, Jean-Baptiste Tavernier. I think I'm doing that right. I don't know. Listen, you guys, I'm getting a lot of names today.
John Baptiste Tavern.
John the Baptist at the bar. Okay.
Exactly.
So he purchased a large diamond of unknown origin during a trip to India. Yet by the 20th century, a myth had sprung up in the United States and Europe that Tavernier had stolen the diamond from the statue of a Hindu goddess. So the newspapers and jewelers who spread the story claimed the diamond was cursed and brought bad luck to those who owned it. Mm-hmm. So again, we're saying like we're putting some kind of moral thing on like theft here and that being like a cursed thing, I guess. So in 1839, the diamond supposedly ended up by that point with Henry Philip Hope, who is a Dutch collector based in London, and the source of the stone's modern name, the Hope Diamond.
Sure, yeah.
So sometime after this, European and American newspapers began claiming that the Hope Diamond carried a curse. So in these 1830s time, right? The French jeweler Pierre Cartier of Cartier fame,
of course,
reportedly used these stories to enhance the diamond's value
when
he sold it to American heiress Evelyn Walsh McLean in the early 1910s. After she died, it went to a U.S. jewelry company, which exhibited it before donating it in 58 to the Smithsonian, where it is today.
Wow. And you have to wonder, too, if like the newspaper is kind of drumming up a story about an object could lead like the future owners to read into things that happen as a curse, just like confirmation bias kind of stuff.
Totally.
I would think all over this. Yeah. But also potentially curses. And like, even if he didn't steal it from like a Hindu goddess statue, even if it's not like religious theft, if you will, it could be like a blood diamond situation where there's like horrible juju all over it because like a bunch of people died to get it out of a mine. So there could be that.
That's some shit. It really is. This next one is one of my personal favorite curses.
Okay.
This is, we're going to the stateside for some American cursery.
A down home curse.
A down home curse. The Curse of Tippecanoe, or Tecumseh's Curse. Dun, dun, dun.
I don't.
In the mid-20th century, the U.S. media began to notice a pattern in presidential deaths.
Oh.
Starting with William Henry Harrison and ending with JFK. So, and I just want to say, like, sidebar, talk about a family that has curse lore around it. The Kennedys.
Fuck yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Even the tangential Grey Gardens ladies. Jesus Christ.
Ooh, yeah. Okay, so here's this. Every 20 years, the country elected a president who would die in office.
Huh.
So wow. Harrison was the first president to ever die in office, and he was elected in 1840.
And this is the American history you just don't get.
Right. This is the stuff I care about, to be honest.
Me too.
If they told these stories in our history classes, I would have paid more attention to some parts.
Yeah, I'm a numerologist. Okay. Tell me about it.
That's right. So the other presidents who died in office include Abraham Lincoln, elected in 1860, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm.
James Garfield, elected in 1880.
Mm.
William McKinley, elected in 1900.
Wow.
Warren G. Harding, elected in 1920. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, elected in 1940. And also just to note that Roosevelt was also elected in 32, 36, and 44, but I'm just saying...
Mm-hmm. No, but that's
in the
20-year
span, it sticks. And then JFK elected in 1960.
Yeah.
The only president between Harrison and JFK to fall outside this pattern was Zachary Taylor, who was elected in 1848 and died in 1850.
Whoa.
We've got like a pattern that
one's really blowing my mind.
1840, 1860, 1880, 1900, 1920, 1940, 1960. Everybody elected on those, dead. In
wow,
office.
Wow.
So how does this involve a curse? We've got this pattern. So in the 1930s, and at this point, we've lost everybody except for FDR and JFK in mm-hmm. this pattern.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 1930s, Ripley's Believe It or Not claimed that the pattern, I know, right? What a reliable resource.
It was my favorite place when I was a little kid.
People loved it. But they claim the pattern was due to a curse Shawnee chief Tecumseh placed on Harrison and future presidents after Harrison's troops defeated Tecumseh at the Battle of Tippecanoe in 1811.
Well, I mean, white people deserved it. Like, America for sure. as a nation deserved it. So, like, it's hard. Mm. Hmm.
And Tecumseh died 2 years later in another battle against Harrison's troops. So in 1813. And the story likely originated with non-Native Americans and kind of bears a similarity to other curses in U.S. books and movies about disturbing Native burial grounds.
Well, and then again, we're back to kind of like making indigenous peoples like scary or like
yeah.
pagan and other. And like I use the word pagan just like in the way that I feel like people would maybe use it derogatorily on purpose. Like,
sure.
There's like an othering quality to doing that, even to like ascribing these curses to Native peoples whose land we're taking. Like, of course people are going to be upset, and like they don't have like literal guns to fight us. And so when things go wrong, we're like, well, they must have called upon their ancestors, right? Fuck everyone.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's kind of the interesting thing too. It's like, I think it's an interesting exercise to wrap your brain around that, because like it's two things true at once. It's like we had this whole like manifest destiny and like we deserve the land from mm-hmm. God, you know, kind of thing.
And God wanted America to be Protestant.
And God wanted America to be Protestant. We've told you before, okay? God was like, give us the Puritans. But then it's also like this kind of negative like side effect, and I guess that's how we ascribe it to like cultures.
It's like
that
justification
are,
for colonizing a little bit.
Totally.
Ugh,
and that you're like, if these people are cursing us, then like they're bad, you know?
Yeah, they have ill intent, like their religion is evil, like this is a non-Christian like entity that we're dealing with. Like, oh wow. I haven't really ever thought about curses until tonight as like a part of kind of like colonization mentality, but obviously through line as usual to colonization.
I mean, always. Always the through line to colonization. No, but I don't think I had thought about that either.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. Number six that I want to tell you about, our last but not least of just, like, big important players here. And I was like, yes, of course, and you'll be familiar with this one. The Curse of Macbeth.
Oh! Wow, there yeah. are lots I wasn't of even superstitions. Categorizing that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there are lots of superstitions in the world of theater, mm-hmm, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's bad luck to wish actors good luck, hence the reason people instead tell them to break a leg. And it's also bad luck to say the word Macbeth in the theater except during a performance of the Shakespeare play. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I feel like
Scottish
a lot of
play.
Scottish instead. Play, yeah. yeah. But supposedly this whole, like, it's bad luck to say Macbeth in the theater is due to kind of tragedy. Like, this is because tragedy is kind of historically befallen productions of the play, mm-hmm. I guess. And in reality, these stories are oftentimes like a mix of fabrication and perhaps sure. some like selective evidence picking. Okay.
Listen, people have died bias. During many an Easter and Christmas play, and we're not shutting that shit down or calling it cursed or saying the play during the winter.
Yeah. Right, totally. So the legend about the play seems to have started with a guy named Max Beerbohm,
okay.
who was a British cartoonist and critic born in the 1870s, nearly three centuries after Macbeth's first performance.
Hmm.
And so Beerbohm possibly annoyed that Macbeth was such a popular play, and this is so silly.
Oh, God, he's a troll?
Yeah, he's basically a troll. He made up a story that the first actor cast to play Lady Macbeth died right before the play's opening night.
Wow. I'm going to start doing this. I'm just going to start urban legends and see what makes its way into meme culture. That's my new life okay. path, you guys. TBD.
Heard it here live. Get ready for your lives to be infiltrated.
Absolutely.
So since then, this story has kind of become part of a myth that the play is cursed and has brought bad luck to those involved with it, though there have been real incidents during runs of Macbeth in its over more than 400-year history,
mm-hmm.
And these accidents gain more attention than accidents during other plays because of the supposed curse. And I'm also like, if a play is run for 400 years, I assume like something bad has happened in that time.
Well, statistically, know? There's more chances for something to go wrong. Yeah, and I'm like, you know, what if we started running The Poltergeist as a stage play? Like, would that cause just absolutely a shitload of accidents? Yeah.
I mean,
I don't listen. Think we had, you and I were both involved in a production of Macbeth. It was my first
was
theater experience. Oh, really? I thought we were in eighth grade and I have a memory of you being there.
I feel like I didn't really do anything that involved that one. It was when we were in eighth grade. I remember going to see it.
Oh.
But like the high school is putting it on, but I don't think I did anything.
Yeah, I went and I painted a bunch of stuff because the eighth graders
nice.
Couldn't really like do a lot except for grunt work. But like I've always been a good worker, you know, so I ended up painting
She's
quite a bit.
She's always been a good worker.
I've always okay. had too many jobs. Back
oh,
to Macbeth.
So many jobs.
Yeah.
So many jobs. Well, you kind of alluded to this when you said Poltergeist. So I kind of... I do want to, like, dabble into some of the kind of cursed movies than, like, the stories that are there.
Yes.
I do want to talk about that a little bit. You into it?
I would love to. I actually Googled where the Poltergeist house was yesterday because I thought it was in my neighborhood because the Halloween house is here and Scientology's here and all kinds of weird cults are here. So I was like, Poltergeist is probably here too. No, it's in Simi Valley. It's about, like 20 minutes away, but you know, I could go there and snap a pic for you if you want, but go on. Poltergeist.
Okay. Well, I read an article on Rotten Tomatoes
mm-hmm.
and it was about, like 13, of course, LOL, cursed movies that will make your skin crawl. And Poltergeist is one of them. And one of the things that they did is they also rank the plausibility of the curse. So
I appreciate
let's
that.
Start with Poltergeist just because we started with Poltergeist. What's the curse?
Let's do it.
Okay. Because Poltergeist is perhaps the most famous cursed movie of all time. The original 1982 Poltergeist. It's about a suburban family terrorized by supernatural presence, and it climaxed with the scene in which the mom, Jo Beth Williams, is dragged into a partially dug out pool and is surrounded by skeletons.
I've never seen the movie. Go on.
Okay. The reveal being that the housing development in which they live was unscrupulously built on top of a graveyard.
Oh, there's a Simpsons episode about that. So I have the whole plot in my mind. Yeah.
It just came. Listen, Treehouse of Horror, y'all. This is how we do it. So the rumor about this movie was that the film crew had not only used real skeletons, but had desecrated graves themselves to get them.
These people are not paid very much. So I don't know about that.
Maybe they're part of the Satanic Temple. We can't know. Mysterious and untimely deaths, though, of some of the actors in the trilogy, including the young Heather O'Rourke, who played the abducted little girl Carol Ann, died at the age of 12 due to, like, a congenial intestinal issue, right?
And so these deaths are, non-debatable. Like, this part is really weird.
Yeah, and then Dominique Dunn, who played the oldest sibling, Dana, was murdered by a jealous boyfriend at the age of 22. Mm. And that, I mean, awful, that led to the urban legend that the ghosts of the unwitting skeletal co-stars had cursed the films and everyone who worked on them. So it's flimsy because, like, clearly major players like Williams, Craig T. Nelson, the director, and obviously producer, it's Spielberg in this case, walked away completely unscathed. Mm. So Rotten Tomatoes gives this one a plausibility score of 1 out of 5. And they say, although it's the movie everyone cites when talking about curses, a lot of the supposed connections are pretty thin. Plus, more of the actors and crew survived unhurt than didn't. And a lot of the, quote, deaths beyond the two young leads were simply aged and explainable illness.
Well, that's very disappointing.
I'm sorry.
Hmm. Real briefly, Dominique Dunn and Dominic Dunn, are they related to, is this a father-daughter situation?
I don't know.
I need to find out real quick.
Okay.
Okay. Wikipedia tells us Dominique Dunn, her father is the author Dominic Dunn. It's weird.
That's crazy. I didn't know that. The weirdest way to name your kid. Okay. That's some
Back to the curses.
Back to the curses. I don't know. Maybe that's what you get when you name your child after yourself. I shouldn't have said that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we can't know. Well, listen, let's go straight to the 70s and talk about another totally cursed movie that people talk about, The Exorcist, right? If the devil really does exist, he seems to spend an awful lot of time on film sets. Okay, so before The Omen tempted fate with each shooting day, and we'll talk about The Omen, William Friedkin's, listen, don't come for me on names today, people.
Yeah.
Okay. The Exorcist experienced its own unnerving incidents. So, telling the story of two priests battling a demonic presence that had taken hold of a young girl named Regan McNeil, or, you know, we know Linda Blair, who went on to, like, host many, like, haunted shows.
We do. And I think she was on What Not to Wear later.
Do you, Linda Blair? She was. I forgot about that. The film is an undisputed classic of the horror genre, and some of that may have to do with the notion that the film itself was actually possessed. So, what happened here? Things got off to a rocky start when the McNeil family home set, where much of the action takes place, was destroyed by a fire. And the only room that was untouched by the blaze was Regan's, the character Linda Blair plays. In addition, almost all of the actors suffered injuries during the filming, and televangelist Billy Graham, got to bring it back to the Christians.
Oh my God. I saw him live once. You'll surely believe it.
He even claimed, and I quote, "There is a power of evil in that film, in the fabric of the film itself," and suggested that simply projecting it was opening a door for demons, which I'm
Listen, Mr. Graham, you're opening a door for a lot of stuff.
That's true. The movie held its premiere in Rome during a violent thunderstorm. One attendee even passed out and broke her jaw, which,
Vatican
like,
adjacent.
Ouch.
Wow, yeah.
Okay. later attempting to sue the production because she blamed subliminal messages for her tumble, which I'm like, hilarious. Curious. Rotten Tomatoes gives the plausibility score of the Exorcist curse a 3 out of 5, yeah. saying that some of the spookiness experienced on set and at early screenings was like psychosomatic, but the movie still carries a heavy creep factor regardless. I'm like, all right, whatever. So let's call back to the aforementioned The Omen. And I'm talking about the 1976 version.
Not the Julia Stiles version.
Not Julia Stiles. But strap in for this one. Okay. Mm. So producer Harvey Bernhard claims that the initial idea for the horror classic The Omen came from an advertising exec named Bob Munger.
Mm.
Munger suggested that a movie about an antichrist would be cool, but that no one should actually make it because, and I quote, the devil was at work and he didn't want that film made. And I'm like, I mean, you're suggesting this. And then also, I don't know. I was just like, okay.
And listen, though, brief aside, like, we are not afraid to talk about the antichrist and like, stay tuned in Spooktober. But
stay tuned.
Yeah, people are afraid about it.
People are horrified, truly. So Bob Munger may have been right, according to Rotten Tomatoes. So, just a month before filming was to start, lead actor Gregory Peck's son committed suicide.
Oh, my.
And as he flew to the set, Peck's plane was struck by lightning. And then executive producer Mark Neufeld's plane was also struck by lightning on his way to the location. The hotel that Neufeld, so our executive producer and his wife were staying in, then got bombed by the Irish Republican Army.
No!
The crew hired a small plane to do some aerial photography, but it was given to another client at the last minute. That plane crashed on takeoff and killed everyone on board.
Oh my God! This filming is too a many zoo things sequence. Now. This one, I'm like, my rating for this is like 6 out of 10. Go on.
I'm not done. The filming of a zoo sequence, the young boy playing the demonic Damien apparently upset the baboons so much they started freaking out. So an animal wrangler was called in to help.
No.
The next day, he was mauled by a tiger and killed.
Oh my God.
But perhaps the most chilling result of this curse was what happened to special effects supervisor John Richardson.
Mm.
One of his big FX sequences in The Omen was one in which a character is decapitated by a sheet of glass.
Oh, God.
While working on his next movie in the Netherlands, Richardson and his assistant were involved in a car accident. His assistant was, you guessed it, decapitated. Legend has that the accident occurred near a street sign that read Omen with two M's, O-M-M-E-N, 66.6 kilometers. But this it's all a coincidence, right?
Oh, my God. That last bit is some, like, law of attraction shit. Like attracts bullshit. That's
so
very unsettling.
The Rotten Tomato, it doesn't make me want to watch The Omen. The plausibility score that Rotten Tomatoes gives it is a 4 out of 5. And they say it's hard to write all of this off as a coincidence.
Yeah, what do
even
we do
when
with that?
People, even with when people discount some of it, like the existence of the Dutch street sign, there's a lot more that's been verified.
What year was that? Because, like, was it a super unlucky year? Like, if that happened in 2020, I would be like, like, that's not a curse. But
the movie came out in 1976.
Okay, well, I'm going to look into 1976 and see if Sharon Tate was also murdered that year and some other things happened, but we'll see.
Okay, all right.
Who knows?
Well, and I also thought that I would like to give a little bit of some color to a movie of our time.
Oh, yeah.
That folks talked about being
Is
cursed.
Is it Jennifer's Body?
I wish. No, The Blair Witch Project. Jennifer's Body, a classic.
It's terrible and
put it on
great.
Everyone's October watch list. Listen, Megan Fox is having a moment again, so go off, fam. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
So The Blair Witch Project, which came out in 1999, horror is a great way for a lot of young talents to break into the business, right? Because often what you don't see is scarier than what you do. Mm-hmm. So it's a godsend for indie filmmakers with more creativity than budget. Okay. The Blair Witch Project came about at exactly the right time, kind of exploiting the still new World Wide Web, right?
Sure, yeah.
It managed to cultivate its own urban legend of supposedly lost cam footage that was recovered after a group of young filmmakers went missing. The conceit of it being filmed on the fly covered over the fact that you don't really see much of anything. And the clever use of some sound effects and the overall naturalistic performances by the lead actors made you think just for a second that maybe this was all the real deal.
People really did think that.
People did. And so, of course, Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2 came out around a year later to confirm that, yes, this was indeed just a cheesy horror franchise at its core.
Yeah. But
so it may have lost some of its luster since, but at the time, it had people really convinced, and the execution from the early websites to the film itself was pretty kind of perfect.
In a way that Paranormal Activity sort of like mimicked later to a lesser degree. But yeah, I do remember like a feeling of like, are we sure that this is like just like a Hollywood movie? Like, are we sure that this isn't like found footage? But
it was a great marketing campaign. Like they really did.
Yes. And for the time, like very impressive.
Mm-hmm. So last but not least, I just want to leave us with one more movie here, kind of rounding out our list of horror, is actually not a horror film, but a movie that is believed to be so cursed it will never be made. Atuk, A-T-U-K.
What?
It's a comedy.
I want to make it.
Based on, well, you'll see. Based on the 1963 satirical novel called The Incomparable Atuk by Canadian author Richler. The story is about an Inuit poet who travels to Toronto and has a series of fish-out-of-water experiences in the big city. The film version Americanized it by making Atuk a native of Alaska who travels to New York. Sounds pretty basic, right? So it might well be if the movie didn't seem to kill every actor associated with the lead role.
Oh my God.
Dun, dun, dun. The Curse of Atuk is particularly weird because the novel itself isn't about anything sinister or paranormal. The first man up for the role was comedy legend John Belushi.
Maybe we should have picked a Native American actor. Go on.
Sure.
Maybe the curse wouldn't have affected so heavily. Who knows?
Maybe we're circling back on colonialism yet again.
Imperialism, absolutely, yeah.
So Belushi, I think a lot of us know the story, untimely death, drug overdose. And after that, the producers approached comedian Sam Kinison, who then died in a drunk driving accident. So they decided to offer the part to John Candy.
No.
Who then had a heart attack a few months after getting the script. I love John Candy. Undaunted, the part was then dangled in front of yet another SNL vet. Yes, Chris Farley. He too would succumb to a drug overdose. And then even stranger, Farley allegedly, gave a copy of the script to a friend he thought who might also be interested in the role. Phil Hartman, of course.
Not Troy McClure.
Phil Hartman. Five months after Farley's death, that's when Hartman was shot and killed by his wife, who then committed suicide.
And rail means so rail.
Terrible. I know. And that concludes our intensive 3-week course.
And thank you, Phil Hartman, for all of your incredible voice work on The Simpsons. Wow.
I mean, truly. Some of the best characters.
Absolutely. Some of the best characters. Wow. That one really fucked me up.
Yeah. The plausibility score that Rotten Tomatoes gives that one is a 5 out of 5. And they said, if this movie doesn't scream first, we don't know what does.
Wow. Fuck, I need to read this book now. Or screenplay or whatever.
But also
it is.
The book is like not cursed at all or not spooky at all, I guess I should say.
Just so that I can have more information. God.
It is wild for 4 people to be offered the role and then all die before it. And then the Phil Hartman is like allegedly Chris Farley shared it with them. So it's like 4, maybe 5 people. But I'm like, I'm sorry. Like at that point you do go, maybe we shouldn't make this movie.
You absolutely do. I think after number 4, you just go ahead.
I was going to say, I would have quit after 3.
3 does feel like the point where it moves from coincidence to pattern.
I think that's right. So lots of movie curses, lots of historical curses, right? And I just kind of want to cycle into the thought of, before we kind of think a little bit about, I don't know, why we're into curses and why we use them to explain things, I just want to pivot a little bit to just talk about curses as plot devices, because I think that might kind of lead us there, if you
Absolutely.
Will.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because curses have been used as plot devices in literature and theater.
Constantly.
And when, yeah, forever. And when used as a plot device, they involve one character placing a curse or a hex on another character. This is often distinguished from adverse spells and premonitions and other such plot devices. So,
for example, God cursing all women. Go on.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start there. So, I'd like to start kind of early here with just Romeo and Juliet.
For sure.
The dying Mercutio curses the Montagues and the Capulets with a plague on both your houses, right? Yep,
absolutely.
Often quoted as a pox on both your houses. So, you know.
Yeah.
Next, let's just holler at Sleeping Beauty. We've got our evil Maleficent in the Disney film. In the actual text, it's an evil fairy named Carabassi or some.
Probably a more complicated figure, yeah.
Probably. Cast a curse on Princess Aurora to die on her 16th birthday. Like, okay, that's pretty fucked. Beauty and the Beast, another thing we see, like, come into Disney. But, you know, this fairy punishing a conceited prince and transforming him into a beast.
Yeah.
The 6 swans and kind of all the variants of that. A mother curses her 6, in some versions 7, in some versions 12. Sons into bird form, and then their sister must sew magic shirts to reverse the transformation, which just like, what a wild time.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
Cool.
It's a German fairy tale. It's part of, I think, the Brothers Grimm stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We also, listen, let's keep it pop cultural and talk about Shrek and Princess Fiona, cursed to be a human by day, but an ogre by night.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. A total plot device. That's like what that whole movie is about. Absolutely. Kind of.
Yeah.
And in There Will Be Blood, for pulling ourselves even further forward, we've got Daniel Plainview was cursed by Eli Sunday through blessing of Daniel's like oil rig through quote baptism. Yeah, weird stuff. But we see this all the time as kind of like a literary device. It's like the thing that sets up the story or for things to unfold, that kind of is what the catalyst that puts things in motion or like brings people together or pulls people
apart.
An
inciting incident, if you will.
Totally. And I guess because it's kind of forever been a plot device for as long as, you know, I can really think of. And those are just some off the cuff examples, but you know, there are millions more, right? It does make me think that as I did more kind of curse reading, that it really felt energetically like how we feel about like origin stories. Just like something to explain something else, a scenario, the way events unfolded, etc., etc. I don't know. What do you think? Does this make you like think that curses are just like a weird origin story, like weird human thing? Do you like believe in things being cursed at all? I mean, especially after that film where everyone died, who's maybe going to star in it? I don't, who's to say?
I think I believe in curses some, maybe. As far as like film curses, I don't know, but
totally,
I guess, like thinking about my own life and like my own,
I was gonna ask, do you feel like anything's been cursed in your life?
Yeah, I do feel so. I recently had this conversation with some friends who were in town because we were talking about astrology, and I have an aunt, a great aunt, who is very into like doing birth charts and stuff, and she did my birth chart, and I didn't have the heart to tell her that she didn't need to spend like months with a protractor and a compass and a calculator, that she could like really just do it online. But
God bless her.
Anyway, she does them all by hand, and that's amazing.
I think that's cool.
And it's probably like super meditative and cool, but you know, also it's all on. Anyway, we were talking about this in a friend group because we were talking about astrology. And when I spoke with my aunt in the last couple of years, we've talked about this a few times, but there's a pattern in our family that she noticed before she got into astrology, but like there's also a pattern within like our familial charts where like the second female of each generation has, and I can't remember right now, but it's like there's a certain planet that is like conjunct a certain way. So there's like some kind of positioning in the sky that repeats like through generations in my family, and it corresponds with that also in my family, the second female, and I think I've told you this off of air, if you will, but the the second female in each generation has some kind of life-threatening or like life extinguishing childhood illness. When she was telling me about this originally, I was like, you know, kind of half listening and just like, oh, whatever. And as she talked about it more, I started to be like, oh shit. So like, not to go on about this for too long, but like the aunt who I was speaking with, she is the second girl in her generation of our family.
Okay.
And she was born with a hole in her heart. And so she's
always
had problems with that. And it made her kind of like a sickly youth, if you will. And and then in the next generation, or I should have started earlier, real quick, older than her, in her dad's sister, who was the second female of her generation, died when she was five of it was scarlet fever or like typhoid. It was it was a disease we don't get anymore. Then next generation, there is no second girl because only my grandma has children of like her family, and my mom has one brother, and those are the only kids in that generation. So that one's clear. Then in my generation, in my family, I'm the first girl, but the second girl is my cousin, and she had brain tumors when she was a child, and now as a young adult has like really crippling migraines every single day, and there are like days where it's better and days where it's worse. And so that was just interesting because it like showed up astrologically and then like really walked out on paper. And like, I don't know that that's like a curse, but like I'm pretty glad that like I'm that I wasn't
the
like,
first
the second one. I'm so sorry, like I love you cousin if you're listening, but like I'm really sorry for like your physical ailments that are maybe generational. Do you have any family curses?
That's interesting. I don't think there's something that feels like familial in some sort of like real crazy pattern. It does make me want to, like, I don't know. Now I want to be like, I don't know. I want to ask some questions or something. Why do I want my family to have a curse? I don't.
I do think that there's also maybe, like, things that have been ascribed to curses previously, like, historically, if there's, like, family curses. I think that maybe some of those are more, like, intergenerational trauma, that it's, like, easier to call it a curse. And so, like, maybe as we get like more and more awake to like psychology shit and like how we damage each other over the course of time, like we also kind of move away from like magical thinking. And so like some of these curses, even like the president's curse for some reason is like not happening anymore. Although we should look up when we're due for another one, even though it skipped 1980 and 2000.
And
2020.
Well, it's the we don't know because Biden was elected in 2020. I remember reading this around his time of election, but I didn't know at the time when I was reading about it that some people ascribed it to the Battle of Tippecanoe. But I did know about the pattern of presidents dying. I just hadn't heard it attributed to like a curse with like an origin story, if you will.
Yeah.
Because people were like, I don't know, this happened a bunch, but it didn't happen the last two times. Yeah. But like, Joe's on the cycle.
Well, maybe it was for a finite amount of time. Yeah. But I don't know. It could be in families. I think curses can just be intergenerational trauma. Because it also makes me think of like the sins of the father kind of stuff.
Oh, sure.
And you just never know. Like, I feel like we don't know enough about science to know how like trauma manifests into like epigenetics, which like we did talk about in a previous episode at some point. And all of this stuff that's kind of tied up with like adverse experience and like being taught or being raised by people who are like highly traumatized can like maybe create magical thinking. And so like I'm curious very much about curses, both, honestly, in a supernatural and a totally natural, like, human trauma ancestry kind of way.
I like that. And I think it's interesting. Sometimes you are, it's like, are we just splitting syntax here?
I think
in
we
calling
are.
Things.
Because even trauma. Physical, like, quote, curses. Like, so for example, I have ulcerative colitis. That's a physical curse, if you will.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But it absolutely has like psychological ties. Like, I know that like when I'm like in therapy or like psychologically well, that like I don't have colitis flares. And when I'm like in the throes of it or doing things that are super triggering or like having interactions that don't feel good, then like my colitis is out of control. And so like there just very much is like this psychological tie that maybe now we're able to understand in a way that we were not previously able to understand. And so it was easier to call things curses.
Yeah, I think that's like an origin story thing. I guess that's why I get that energetically, but we're trying to like explaining how something came to be and when it's negative. And it's kind of like a lot of times when people even try and assign like karmic to it, or we talked about karmic justice last year during Spooktober.
We sure did.
That like, you know, bad things that happen to you are your fault. Another way to like explain that is to be like, it's like a curse or some sort of, or like bad luck or, you know, some sort of, I don't know, energetic thing.
Wow.
I don't know. Do you believe in curses in a hex kind of way that they could be cast upon you? Like somebody...
I don't know. It's hard because, like, I think, and I can't believe I'm, like, saying this out loud, like, on a public forum. Okay. But I think that I do believe to some degree, like, in chaos magic. Because I do think that, like, you know, like attracts like, and that you can kind of, like, assert your will or certain changes to kind of sway, like, the winds of chaos. Like, I don't think that we could have, like, a lot of control over anything that happens in the universe, but I think that we can kind of, like, also blow into the fan and, like, maybe change the direction a little bit. So in that way, could someone curse someone else? I feel like because I believe that, like, I could manifest good things magically for myself, you know, then that also means that on the flip side, someone could manifest bad things on purpose. And I would guess that you would have like consequences to pay for that. But maybe that's just my personal view of the universe. I don't know. I do think that like negative energy is easier to create than positive energy. And so like,
for sure,
if magic is real in any way, I think that like as humans, it's probably easier to curse each other than it is to like create positive change in like a supernatural or even natural way. So fuck, maybe. Yeah.
Even, jot that down. Okay.
Even if it's just in like a, you're shitty to people, and then that creates like a chain reaction of people being shitty. Like if I've hexed someone who maybe I work with at a bookstore, I don't know, maybe it's a fucking really annoying coworker. We both work at a bookshop and I hate you. So I put a hex on you. I'm probably also not being very nice to you while we're at work. And that could be like affecting your day, affecting your environment, and like cause negative changes in your life that have nothing to do with the curse that I did, but like that I have still caused. And so yes and no in that way. Yes. I don't know. Where are you at with that?
Yeah, I think that I just always really subscribe to, like, not understanding how things like that work and being, like, open to it.
No, you know? I like to lean into not understanding. I'm totally good with that, too. Yeah.
Totally. And I think there's some, I don't know, just, I think that in a lot of ways, at least in the Western world, we're, like, folks are, like, really out of touch with stuff like that. And because it's something we've, like, considered pseudoscience. And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe if there's a little more research, maybe if people are a little more invested in kind of getting to the bottom of that, maybe we'd have a little more information.
So no, I agree. Yeah. And even just the microscopic kind of social sway of, like, interpersonal magic. Like, there's, we can infinitely split the hairs of sociology and, like, break it down into, like, what I would consider, like, social magic and, like, holding sway over people. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm just Jack Parsons, where I think that, like, science and magic, like, are this Venn diagram where they touch each other. But, yeah, just get really good at reading people, and I feel like you could curse them by just saying things that would be super triggering and ruin their week, you know?
Okay, on board.
Yeah, that's a kind of magician.
That is, in fact, a kind of magician, I would say. Okay.
Yeah.
Hear, hear. Well, on that note of kinds of magicians, shall we pivot into a verbal game?
Let's do it.
Cue the vibraphone.
Cue the vibraphone.
Okay, so I'd like to present you this evening with a would you rather.
Yes.
So on this would you rather quest, and on this cursed quest, we talked about the movie It Took and literally the four, possibly five potential leads who all died. So that's some color there. I'd like to give you a little color about another curse I briefly mentioned in today's episode, but did not expand upon. Shall we speak about the Kennedy family curse for a moment?
Oh, yeah.
So the Kennedy curse is one of the most documented cases of family curse. Heartache and tragedy span through generations of the Kennedy family tree. In the late 40s, Joseph Kennedy Jr. and Kathleen Kennedy Carvandish both perished in plane crashes. Rosemary Kennedy struggled for years with developmental issues leading to a tragic lobotomy that only made things worse. Yeah, that's a dark story for another time, y'all. Before passing in 2005. Then JFK was supposed to be the turn of the family's luck and most were optimistic when he became president. However, obviously, we know how that presidency ended in catastrophe in 1963. And then 5 years after JFK's assassination, a lone gunman murdered his younger brother, Robert Kennedy, or Bobby affectionately, in Los Angeles. And then two of Bobby's children perished in tragic incidences, one in the 80s of a drug overdose and another in the 90s in a skiing mishap. And additionally, in 1999, John F. Kennedy Jr., JFK's son, lost his life alongside his wife and his sister-in-law in that tragic plane crash. So,
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, very dark stuff there. And so my question for you is, would you rather be a part of the Kennedy family tree?
Jesus Christ.
Or take on the lead role in It Took?
Okay, well, as a female, it's interesting to take on that role. And I wonder if I would have some kind of, like, loophole safety situation.
Is it interesting just because the other people who've died are men?
Yeah, so I'm assuming it's a male role. And, like, I'm totally cool with playing a man. But I just...
You don't have to play a man. It could be the same story. I mean, it's just, like, somebody comes from one place and has, like, a comedic city experience.
Yeah, fish out of water comedy.
Yeah, totally.
I think that I would rather do that because my logic is that the rest of my life remains the same. But if I'm a member of the Kennedy family and the curse, I'm a member of the Kennedy family. And that is my family and who I was raised by all of a sudden. And that could lead me into drug overdoses or strange dabblings with, like, other government people or agencies that I'm, like, not as as Jamie, you know, in contact with. And that could be dangerous. Okay. I don't know. I think also just like the pressure of being a Kennedy and the Catholicism and the debating. Like the I just can't. And I respect women too much to be a Kennedy because I would be such a fuckboy if I was a Kennedy, you know? Can you imagine?
I can. Wow. What a fuckboy.
So yeah, I'm gonna take on the lead role. What could you pronounce again for me the name?
Atuk.
I'm Atuk, and I'm ready to answer to the Native peoples of Alaska about like probably my offensive taking on of this role. So I'll prepare my apology speech and hopefully survive. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's probably.
I just don't want to spend my whole life as a Kennedy. Can you imagine the childhood? Ugh. The privilege. I mean, not everyone in that
family's died, though, and you got a lot of money. Cold. So,
it's
like,
very cold. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
I just don't want to be a part of a political dynasty family ever.
Yeah, I mean that feels difficult. Mm-hmm. Difficult.
And the Catholicism and the womanizing.
I don't know, but I'm like, could you wield your power for good? Your power and your spending?
I can yield my Atuk power for good. I can bring attention to the Native peoples of Alaska. I could issue an enormous apology after the film comes out and then become an advocate for the people who really are from that culture. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe there's a way to make it right.
I'm rooting for you, and you'll say to them, listen, it was this role or they were gonna make me a Kennedy, and people will totally believe you.
Yeah. Wow. Some people would believe me. Yeah. And that would be good enough. And then I would die by the end of filming anyway, and it would be fine.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I think, I don't know. It would be interesting to be a Kennedy. It would be...
I think I'd rather die filming a movie than being the president or a senator. So maybe that's the real answer.
Wow. I mean, yeah, I don't think you have to get into politics if you're a Kennedy, but okay.
Don't you?
Oh, well.
There's like one Kennedy that's super into gaming. Sorry, go ahead.
Things we didn't need to know that we needed to know about the Kennedys. Well, listen, you guys, Spooktober is live. It's happening. It's our favorite collective month of the year.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. And I hope that you're playing Dungeons & Dragons with a Kennedy right now.
That, actually, if you are, again, that's something we're going to need you to slide into the DMs.
If you're in our hometown, that literally could be happening because there's a Kennedy who I have on good word plays Dungeons & Dragons in Finneytown. Okay, please tell us.
Wow. And on that note, as always, you can find us on the internet via email at whyareyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyareyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. Good night, good morning, good evening, happy spooking.
Absolutely. And join us next Thursday for a FUPdate where we may or may not tell you how to create the Antichrist. I don't know. Who knows? Bye.
You can't know about the instructions you will be given. Bye.